From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. It is the first day of a brand new year. For most of us, that means creating a list of resolutions we hope to honor for at least a few months. But this year, a few select Democrats and Republicans have one main resolution. That's making it into the White House. It's an election year, and with a viable black candidate and female candidate running for president, 2008 is already history in the making. Here to give us a preview of the elections and other political stories of 2008, we've got James Taylor. He's an associate professor of political science at the University of San Francisco. We've also got Michael Fauntroy. He's a professor at the George Mason School of Public Policy and the author of Republicans and the Black Vote. James and Michael, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have this election season breathing down our necks after what seems like months and months and months and months and months of previews and debates. The first primary is just days away. The top political story for 2008 is sure to be this election. First, though, I want to discuss the recent news in Pakistan. Opposition leader Benazir Bhutto was assassinated. Reports are saying this might be the work of al-Qaeda. Michael, does the attack on Bhutto set a tone for what's to come in the region in 2008?
Well, quite frankly, I don't see how it couldn't. You know, it is no surprise, sadly, I must say, that Benazir Bhutto was assassinated. And the fear that many people have is that this will lead to a destabilization of Pakistan. I think that concern is very well warranted. President Pervez Musharraf's hold on the country is somewhat leaky, if you ask me. And so I see that as a tremendous concern for the country, for the region, and it will reverberate into the U.S. presidential election.
When you think about what's going on, James, do you think that the U.S. is going to take a stake in what's going on in Pakistan? So far, we have, as a nation, the government has looked at Pakistan as a bulwark against Islamic extremism. Is this a bulwark that can hold?
Well, that's a good question. But I think one things that we sort of need to sort of pause and think about is prior to September 11th, the summer of 2001, I think in June or July, there was a great deal of concern about both Pakistan and India sort of testing their missiles across each other's borders. And that was sort of the most sort of, you know, tenuous and sort of threatening moment in terms of nuclear power and nuclear threat. And then what happens, I think, in the end is after September 11th occurs, Pakistan and India were off the table. But initially it was Pakistan and India. And then India, of course, invokes the possibility of China, all of these major nuclear powers coming together in very tense international relations. So the United States, of course, needed Pakistan to be strong. But it appears that there's a great deal, as Michael said, of instability there.
Do you think that the presidential candidates here in the U.S. are going to have to reframe some of their arguments for 2008 around this happening, this assassination in Pakistan? What do you think, Michael?
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. I think that the campaign and the candidates are now going to have to move from sort of theoretical, hypothetical discussions to more specific, real case studies because what's going on in Afghanistan, and by the way, you know that President Hamid Karzai and Benazir Bhutto had met just hours before she was assassinated. And at some level, they both had a shared concern about their positions and in the positions of their countries relative to growing democracy in that part of the world. And so I think that the candidates going forward are going to have to really focus and explain in far more detail than some of them may be prepared to about how they would deal with loose nukes, the democratic process in that part of the world, and how they would foster and encourage democracy. The reality is we've been sort of stuck with Pervez Musharraf at some level. He's not a Democrat. He took power in a coup. And relying on someone like him to bring about democracy in Pakistan is very problematic. And so the candidates are going to have to be very nuanced, as I see it, in how they address this going forward.
James, what is the importance of foreign policy overall? People have talked a lot about Iraq and even a bit about Afghanistan, but there's also this enormous economic threat looming over the United States, even across the world, the ripple effect of the mortgage crisis in the U.S. How's that going to pan out against the international issues?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think you could even include immigration into that whole sort of question. And it seems to me that in terms of American foreign policy overall, and I mean the weakness of the dollar on the international markets, the American sort of reputation in the world, of course, has taken a tail dive. So it just seems overall that America is in trouble. Our military is stretched beyond its capacities throughout the world. 500,000 soldiers is the size of our U.S. forces. And we have, I think, about 150,000 over in the region of Iraq and Afghanistan alone. So American foreign policy, I think, is something that will force, I think, some of these candidates, such as, I think, like Huckabee and Giuliani, who were gaining a great deal of momentum on these domestic issues and sort of these wedge issues like immigration, now to sort of be much more concrete about issues that they don't have any experience on. And I think Huckabee already is sort of revealing that he doesn't really have a good handle on foreign policy. People like, I think, Biden and Dodd and Hillary Clinton tend to show stronger and have greater strength as a result of this terrible tragedy in Pakistan and the violence in the whole region.
What's going to be on the table as we enter the Iowa caucuses? I mean, this is really right here, right now, after so many months of almost being here, maybe being here, debate about who will get here. Now's the time for people to start making up their minds in these primaries. What do you see ahead in your crystal ball? I'm just going to have to ask each of you that.
Well, I see a tremendous, tremendous battle on the Democratic side. You know, the Iowa caucuses that are coming up in just a few days on Thursday will be very curious to me, not for who wins the first round of balloting, but who is the second choice candidate among the second tier supporters. That is to say, those who support Bill Richardson, Joe Biden, Chris Dodd, for example. And all of the polling that I've seen so far, it suggests that John Edwards is the most favored second candidate amongst those candidates, the supporters of those candidates. So it suggests to me that John Edwards may actually be able to pull out a victory, if not a very strong second place. On the Republican side, you know, I tend to agree that the occurrences in Pakistan have come at a pretty bad time, politically speaking, for Mike Huckabee, in that he does not have the gravitas in terms of foreign policy experience compared to someone like John McCain, for example. And so when you look at it in those sort of raw, stark political terms, I think going forward, what you're going to see is the people who have the most experience or the people who are perceived to have the most experience or be well experienced rising to the top.
What about the Republicans?
Yeah, I think with the Republicans, I think the same thing is true. I think you'll begin to see someone like a John McCain who the assassination of Ms. Bhutto, I think, really sort of sets John McCain apart from many of the other candidates in terms of his foreign policy experience. He cancels Rudy Giuliani out in terms of Giuliani's ability to raise the specter of September 11th. John McCain was already gaining momentum in the Iowa and in New Hampshire, like Edwards was on the Democratic side. So suddenly this terrible thing happens in Pakistan, and it shows that John McCain is someone who is of much more substance in terms of a foreign policy understanding of world affairs. And I think that bodes well for him. So I think we're going to see some movement in John McCain. I think the likes of Romney and Huckabee and even Giuliani, stars will continue to sort of decline. Giuliani, of course, is putting all of his chips in Florida, hoping to win as a national candidate. And it is true that McCain did win in 2000 in Iowa and did not win the presidency. So winning Iowa and New Hampshire, I think, is important for someone like a Barack Obama, for someone like a John Edwards. But I don't think in the long run it's that important, except for sort of momentum and the ability to talk about electability and fundraising. But I think the likes of John Edwards, John McCain come out of this moment looking better than people have predicted up to this point.
Michael, what about this whole idea of South Carolina as the black primary? There are a lot of big contests that happen back to back to back. Is South Carolina going to be influential?
I think for Barack Obama, it's going to be critical because mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, if he doesn't win Iowa, it's going to be very difficult for him to win New Hampshire because the winner of Iowa will have some momentum going into New Hampshire. And, and is likely to be the winner or second place in New Hampshire from my perspective. And so that really does hang, that really does require Obama to hang his hat in South Carolina, because he hasn't really done very much campaigning in Nevada. And so if he doesn't pull it out in South Carolina, I just don't see how it's possible for him to win the nomination. And by the way, he suffers just in the same way that Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney and also Rudy Giuliani do in the foreign policy experience category in the wake of the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. And so he's got to figure out a way to capitalize on whatever momentum he gets coming out of Iowa and New Hampshire to really win South Carolina, because I don't think he can lose South Carolina and win the nomination.
I agree. I think he has to sort of demonstrate, as Jesse Jackson did in 1984, the ability to garner, you know, the black vote in South Carolina, and even few moderate or liberal whites in South Carolina. So that's a very critical state for Obama. He can't afford to lose South Carolina, as Michael says.
But let me add one more thing there. And I think you're right. I want to add, however, Jesse Jackson was native to South Carolina. Mm-hmm. He had very deep roots in the state. And, mm-hmm. and he was able to win in large measure running a protest campaign. Barack Obama doesn't have the same connections to the state, and he is not running as a protest candidate. And so I would not be surprised if his share of the black vote in 2008 falls far short of what Jesse Jackson did in 1988, for example.
Sure.
All right. Well, we'll keep that crystal ball open. Thank you, gentlemen.
You're very welcome.
We've been speaking with Michael Fauntroy, a professor at the George Mason School of Public Policy. He joined us from our headquarters studios in Washington, D.C. Also, James Taylor, he is an associate professor of political science at the University of San Francisco, and he spoke with us from Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco.
Tell me, say one thing, Nancy, if you understand. One thing, Nancy, if you understand. One make them a talk about me ambition. Say one make who them a talk about me ambition. Come and say some of them ask me where me get it from.
Just ahead, we look at Africa in the year 2008, gazing into our crystal ball, and later, why so few women of color had corporate departments and teams.